This message titled Children of the Light from 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 verses 4 through 5 was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com.
Brothers and sisters, I remember when Rachel and I first got married. There were, and all of you who are married know that this is commonplace. There were many different habits that we had to work through. For instance, in our marriage, one of us was an early bird, and the other was a night owl. And of course, in many ways, whether you're an early bird, whether you're a night owl, falls out according to preference. And when we first got married, my preference was to be a night owl. At about 11 o'clock at night is when I began to hit my stride, and that is when I did my best reading. In the hours that came after that is when I did my best studying and my best writing. But Rachel was the exact opposite of me. Rachel was not, by any stretch of the imagination, a night owl. She was an early bird. She loved to jump out of bed with the rising of the sun and get all of her work, all of her labor for the day done during the daylight hours. And of course, many of us understand that. We relate to that. Preferentially, there are people, you might say, who are people of the day, and there are others who are people of the night. People who prefer to do their work in the darkness, and those who prefer to do their work in the daylight hours. And you see, if we can borrow from that common understanding, that common thought, what is true of many of us biologically, Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying in this passage, is true in a specific sense, spiritually. There are those who, spiritually speaking, are people of the night. And there are those, spiritually speaking, who are people of the day. But this spiritual distinction is not one of mere preference. Rather, what the scriptures testify to and what Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are emphasizing here is that distinction, if I can put it this way this evening, is a moral distinction. It is a distinction of moral character, one which is of eternal significance. I want to remind you, as we've been going through this letter, where we are. The Thessalonians, we get the picture from this letter, they were an inquisitive church. They had many questions for Paul and for Silvanus that likely came to them through the hand of Timothy. You remember Timothy had visited them and returned to Paul and returned to Silvanus and given them the report of all that was going on. And it's likely that Timothy brought with him some of the questions that this church had. And what a wonderful thing. If you want to know how to encourage your elders, how to encourage your pastor, come with spiritual questions. And in particular, the questions that the Thessalonians have really, in many ways, center upon, don't they, the return of Jesus Christ. We saw at the end of chapter 4 that the Thessalonians were scratching their heads. They were wondering, you know, what happens to those who die before Jesus returns? And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy very pastorally, very wonderfully work through that question, letting us know exactly what happens. Those who die before the coming of Christ, in many ways, are in the preferential place, because the dead in Christ will rise first. And then those who are alive will be caught up together with them to meet the Lord in the air and to be with him forever. And the Thessalonians had another question. The question that we've looked at in past weeks. And that is not simply, well, what happens to those who die before Jesus returns? But, well, then, Paul, when is Jesus going to return? Can't you give us the day? Can't you give us the hour? Can't you reveal to us the exact moment when Jesus will come again? And of course, their answer to that question, as we have it in verse 1, now concerning the times and seasons, brothers, you have no need that anything be written to you. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying, we don't need to write to you because we don't know. This is something that is unrevealed. God has not revealed to us when Jesus will return. And the secret things are for God, but the revealed things are for us and for our children. But then Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy go on, as we began to see last week, that though we do not know the timing of Jesus' return, we do know something. It has been revealed to us something of what it will be like. Jesus will return, and he will return in a demonstration, in a show of tremendous strength and force. And we saw last week, as the Spirit was willing, that they use these three images, don't they? That the Lord there in verse 2 will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. And of course, brothers and sisters, we can see from those three images, from that force that is being exerted, the strength that Jesus comes and returns with, in one sense, is worked in a negative way, isn't it? A thief breaking in the night is not a good scene. Calamity and disaster that comes suddenly is not a good scene. Labor pains are painful and hard. And so naturally, the next question that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are going to transition to, and the next question that they do transition to is, well then, how do we prepare for that day? If we don't want the return of Christ to be to us like the coming of a thief in the night, if we don't want the return of Christ to be in our lives a moment of sudden destruction and the inescapable pain of labor, what do we do? And that is the emphasis that is played out really in verses 4 through 11 of this fifth chapter. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy saying, you want to be prepared for that day, here's how you prepare. And it falls out really along two answers. The first answer, how do you prepare for that day? It has to do with who we are. It has to do with who we must be in order to be prepared. And then they give instruction out of who we are, what we must do. Who we are and what we must do. And I want to remind you, because it's preached often from this pulpit, that is, so to speak, the biblical formula. Who we are determines what we must do. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say, in the first place, in verses 4 through 5, here's who you need to be. You need to be children of light. You need to be children of light who aren't living and walking in darkness. And in verses 6 through 10, they specify then what we must do as those who are children of light. Brothers and sisters, who determines the what? And this evening, I want to begin with the first part of that answer. How do we prepare for the return of Christ so that it doesn't come upon us suddenly, so that it doesn't come upon us violently, so it doesn't destroy us? The first answer is, here is who you must be. You must be children of light. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy write, but you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. For you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness. And this evening, in considering those words, I want to take it up under 3 points. First, I want to begin with a concept. My second point this evening will be a contrast. And my final point this evening will be a characterization. A characterization. So we have a concept, a contrast, and a characterization. Let me begin this evening preaching what I want to call a concept. It's very clear when we come here to this fourth verse and into the fifth verse, there is a very prominent concept. There's a prominent idea, isn't there? It's the idea of light and darkness. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy, they write this so emphatically. In verse 4, you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. Verse 5, for you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness. Do you hear, just in the reading of that, the repetition? You are not in darkness. You are children of light. You are children of the day. You are not children of the night. You are not children of darkness. There is this fascinating concept, this fascinating idea that they bring to the forefront here. And it's not a concept that runs through much of this letter. If we were to read this letter from start to finish, you would find that this idea of light and darkness, this concept, is not one that they bring up again and again in this letter. But it is, brothers and sisters, an extremely important and significant concept in the Bible. The idea of light and darkness is a concept that permeates the pages of Scripture, so that an understanding of the Christian faith, an understanding of Christianity, depends on understanding this concept, this idea of light and darkness. And as Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy write this, you can see you can almost see the way in which it plays out in their thoughts. As they say in verse 2, you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. And you can begin to see, even in verse 4, the associations. Oh, we've just told them that the day of the Lord is going to come like a thief in the night. We're quoting Jesus, and oh, that leads us then into this great and broader concept, this biblical idea of light and of darkness. If I can put it this way this evening, what Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are doing here, they are, in a sense, borrowing from a very profound theological concept, that of light and darkness. And so I just want to give you a smattering of where we see this concept arise in the Scriptures. So, for instance, this idea of light, this concept of darkness, the Scriptures help us understand something of God on the basis of this idea. Here's what I mean by that. The Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 16 says, God dwells in unapproachable light. Light is the very character of God. He dwells, Paul says, in unapproachable light. The Apostle John in 1 John chapter 1, verse 5 says, God is light, and in him there is no darkness. That this concept of light and darkness informs our understanding of Jesus, our understanding of his person, our understanding of his work. If you remember the way that the Apostle John begins his gospel, in John chapter 1, verse 4, the Apostle John writes, in him, that's in Jesus, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. John chapter 1, verse 9, Jesus is called the true light. As God himself is light, Jesus is true light. He is light of light, as the ancient church confessed. It helps us understand the ministry of Jesus. In Matthew chapter 4, as Christ begins his preaching ministry, as he has been baptized and as he's been led into the wilderness to be tempted by Satan, and now after that wilderness temptation, beginning his public ministry, here's how his ministry is described by the Gospel of Matthew. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 16, people living in darkness have seen a great light. This concept of light and darkness is defining of what it means to be saved. In Acts chapter 26, verse 18, the Apostle Paul says, here's what God does through the gospel. He opens their eyes to turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God. Ephesians chapter 6, we are told that we live in this present darkness. Satan himself is called the prince of darkness. The Apostle Paul in Colossians chapter 1, verse 13 says that God has delivered us from the domain of darkness. The Apostle Peter in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9 says that the Father has brought us out of darkness and into his marvelous light. And this concept of light and darkness informs the witness of the church. Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, Jesus says, you are the light of the world. You see, my simple point here is that this concept that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy now fall back on, this concept that they bring to the front of what they're saying and to the front of our consciousness, is an idea deeply, deeply rooted in the Scriptures, framing and helping us understand the character of God and the person and the work of Jesus Christ, and what it means to be saved, what it means to be a Christian, what the witness of the church is intended to be. And borrowing that concept, Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say, but you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. For you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night, or of the darkness. So important is this idea. And I wonder tonight, without being overly pessimistic, how many of us think of God and think of the person and the work of Christ and think of salvation and think of witness in these biblical terms of light and darkness. That's the first thing I want you to see. Just the concept, just the idea. But secondly, this evening, I want to preach the contrast. The contrast. It's very clear that what Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying here, they are contrasting, aren't they? What it means to be in darkness with what it means to be in light. Right away in verse 4, verse 4 begins in our translation with, but. Right? But you are not in darkness. They're contrasting for us those for whom the return of Christ will come like a thief in the night, will come like sudden destruction, will come like labor pains, with those who are not in darkness. And so we need to think this evening, what does that mean? When Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say there in the fourth verse, but you are not in darkness, what's it mean? Practically speaking, what's it mean to be in darkness? And practically speaking, what does it mean to not be in darkness? And of course, because they're borrowing from this great concept, we can go to the Scriptures to understand what that means. What does it mean to be in darkness? Well, oftentimes, let me just emphasize a few angles of this. Oftentimes, biblically speaking, to be in darkness means that you are ignorant. You are spiritually ignorant. Let me give you an example of this. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 18. There in Ephesians 4, if you're familiar with the way that letter falls out, the Apostle Paul begins to write about how Christians are supposed to walk, what is supposed to characterize our lives. And Paul says in Ephesians 4, you are to no longer walk as the Gentiles do, Who are the Gentiles? The Gentiles are those without Jesus, those who don't believe in the gospel. And Paul says in Ephesians 4, verse 18, you are no longer to walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. And then Paul goes on to describe what the futility of their minds are in these words. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardness of their hearts. Paul's saying, here's what it means to be in darkness. Your mind, your understanding is darkened. You are in spiritual ignorance. You don't believe the things of God. You don't receive the things of God because you can't. You're somebody who doesn't understand. You are darkened by spiritual ignorance. Or as the Apostle Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, a chapter that is so central to our understanding of what it means to preach the gospel. And Paul in 2 Corinthians 4 says to the Corinthians, he says, you remember when I was among you, I made an open statement of the truth. He's saying, I didn't hold anything back. I preached to you faithfully. I preached to you openly. And Paul actually has enough confidence in the way in which, in the manner of his preaching, that in 2 Corinthians 4, he says, I preached the gospel so clearly that if people don't get it, if people don't believe it, the only reason, he says in 2 Corinthians 4, is because the God of this world has blinded the minds of unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ. You see what Paul is saying? Paul's saying to be in darkness is to have your eyes blinded so that you can't see what? So that you can't see the light of the glory of the gospel of Jesus Christ. You want to know why men and women, young and old, don't get the gospel? It's because they're in darkness. They're in complete and total spiritual ignorance. They're blind and they cannot see it for what it is. And you see, when Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy write then, when they write in the fourth verse, you are not in darkness. They're saying, here's a truth about you. You're not ignorant. There's not a veil over your eyes. You're not blinded. You're not spiritually darkened in your mind. But you know what the truth is. What does it mean to be in darkness? Not only this idea of spiritual ignorance, but biblically speaking, to be in darkness means that you live your life in a wicked way. Now, unfortunately, in today's world, we need to qualify that something, don't we? Because usually when we think of wickedness, we think of the really reprobate things. When we think of wickedness, we tend to define wickedness in human terms. But what the scriptures make very clear is that evil and wickedness define and distinguish all those who are in spiritual darkness. This is exactly what the apostle John writes in John chapter 3. In John chapter 3, as Jesus is meeting, you remember that scene? Jesus meets with Nicodemus, a teacher of the law. And Nicodemus comes to Jesus in the dark of night, of all things. And he begins to ask Jesus these questions, and Jesus begins to answer them. And there we have that passage that you need to be born again. There we have John 3:16, so well known by so many people, so little understood. And in John chapter 3, verse 19, Jesus says this. This is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people loved the darkness rather than the light, because their works were evil. For anyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light. Do you hear what Jesus is saying? Jesus is saying, here's a way to understand what it means to be in darkness. Those who revel in wickedness. Those whose lives are defined by evil. Those who hate what is light and cling to those things that are dark. And what are these works of darkness? Well, again, the scriptures give us such a comprehensive understanding. In Ephesians chapter 5, the Apostle Paul actually says, here's the works of darkness. Sexual immorality. All impurity. Covetousness. Filthy and foolish talk. Crude joking. Ingratitude. Idolatry. In Romans chapter 13, Paul writes that the works of the darkness are orgies and drunkenness and uncleanness and impurity. Paul actually says there in Romans 13, any gratification of the flesh is a work of darkness. To be in darkness is not only to be spiritually ignorant, but it's to live your life in the death grip of sin. It's to live your life in the death grip of sin. To love sin more than you love what is right. But again, the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 5:8 says this. But the fruit of light is found in all that is good and all that is true. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying that's to be in darkness is to be those who embrace wickedness. But you, brothers, that's not you. What does it mean to be in darkness? Not only spiritual ignorance, not only wickedness, but very briefly, it touches upon eternal misery. Has it ever struck you the way in which Jesus described hell? I know the doctrine of hell has fallen on hard times. But we believe the Bible. We believe the words of Jesus. Jesus preached more on hell than he did on heaven. And do you remember how Jesus so graphically pictures and depicts the misery of hell? In Matthew chapter 8, do you remember how he does it? He speaks of the outer darkness. They will be cast into outer darkness, where there is no light, where there is no joy, where there is no delight, where there is no hope. All these things taken, hell is described in terms of outer darkness. But how is the inheritance of the believer described? In Colossians chapter 1, verse 12, we read that the Father has qualified us to share in the inheritance of his holy people in the kingdom of light. Part of what it means to be in darkness means that you are on the road, you are setting a trajectory that leads to eternal misery. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying, but they're saying that's not you. You, brothers, are not in darkness. That's the contrast, brothers and sisters. To be in darkness means you are in ignorance. To be in darkness means that you live in wickedness and evil things. To be in darkness means that misery is your inheritance. But to be in light means you have knowledge and you have holiness, and your inheritance is eternal happiness. So much for the contrast. Let me finish this evening on this point, and that is the characterization. The characterization. I want you to look carefully at what Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy write here. I will admit to you that it left me for the greater part of this week trying to scratch my head, making heads or tails. Because at first glance, it just looks so repetitive. They write in verse 4, "But you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief." So they're saying this makes all the difference. Yes, Jesus is going to return, and when Jesus returns, he's going to come like a thief in the night. When Jesus returns, it's going to be like a sudden destruction. When Jesus returns, he's going to come like labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and there will be no escape. But Paul says, but that's not true for you. It's not true for you. Why? Because you are not in darkness. And why is it that the Thessalonians are not in darkness? Paul gives an answer to that question in verse 5. Right? Verse 4, you are not in darkness. Why? Verse 5, for, or the word because you are all children of light. Children of the day. And then really emphatically, so we really get what they're saying, we are not of the night or of the darkness. Do you get the logic? Why are we not in darkness? Because they say we are children of light. Now that's an interesting expression. What on earth does it mean? We're children of light. What does that mean? Practically speaking, what does it mean to be a child of light? Here, Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy use it. Elsewhere, the scriptures use it. Jesus in Luke chapter 16, verse 8, and in John 12, 36, you are sons of light. John 12, 36, Jesus actually says, believe the light that you may become sons of light. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 9, the apostle Paul says, we are children of light. What's that mean? Well, very simply this evening, it's an idiomatic expression. And it's not actually a Greek idiom, it's a Hebrew idiom. And what I mean by that is, it's an idiom that is understood within the culture of the Hebrew people. We find this kind of thinking in the Old Testament. To be a child of something, to be a child of something means that you are dominated or you are influenced by that thing. So here's what I mean. Let's draw a connection to what we heard from God's word this morning. Hosea was to go and marry what? A wife of whoredom. An idiomatic expression saying that the woman that he was to marry was to be characterized, to be dominated, to be influenced by a promiscuous life. You can think of James and John in Mark chapter 3. You remember when those two disciples of Christ wanted to do what? They wanted to call down thunder upon those who didn't believe. And they're called sons of thunder. Why? Because there's a certain aggressiveness that influenced them, that dominated the way that they thought. So when Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say, you are not in darkness, why? Because you are all children of light, very simply, they're saying, here's what characterizes you. You are dominated. You are influenced. You are characterized by light, not by darkness. You are characterized by a true knowledge of Jesus Christ. You are characterized by true gospel holiness. You are characterized not by eternal misery, but you are characterized by that inheritance that belongs to the children of light. You are, to put it simply, they're just saying, we are children of light. We are dominated, we are influenced by the light, not by the darkness. And just so you don't think I'm making that up, I want you to notice it's interesting. In verse 5, for you are all children of light. And then what they immediately, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness. What are they getting at with those words? Well, brothers and sisters, what is it that dominates the day? It's light. I know that every analogy breaks down, but on an ordinary summer day, you cannot go outside at noonday and not be in light. If you were to step outside tomorrow afternoon at noon when the sun is to be its highest, you would never expect darkness. Because the daytime is the time, is the sphere where light dominates. And distinct from that, the nighttime is the sphere, the realm, you might say, that is dominated by darkness. So that tonight at midnight, if you go outside, you would never expect to see as plainly as at noonday. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy, they're saying, here's what characterizes you as Christians. You're children of the light. You are made for the day. You're not made for the night. You're not children of darkness. This is who you are in Jesus Christ. And they're saying this makes all the difference. Brothers and sisters, this makes all the difference. Why is it that that day, the return of Jesus Christ, will not be a day of fear and terror and destruction and pain? Because you're children of light. You are children who are influenced by the light. You are children who are made for the day. You are children in Jesus Christ made for that day. So it's not an unwelcomed guest like the thief in the night. But it's a welcomed day. As people of the day, we long for the sun of righteousness to rise, to crest above the horizon, and with unstoppable force to reach the heights of noonday. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying that's what characterizes you as Christians. You're not in darkness. You're in light because you are children of the day. And friends, in closing, I preach all this tonight, not only as a means of preparing you for the day that Jesus returns. Right, this makes it, if you're going to be prepared for that, you need to be a child of light. You need to believe in the light. You need to believe in Jesus. But also because, friends, this, in a very real sense, this is what defines a Christian. You know, we live in a day and age and in a culture where everybody and their mother sometimes seems to be Christians. As though Christianity is merely putting a check mark in a box. As if being a Christian is merely being able to say yes to a few questions. And then to be patted on the back and told, well, congratulations, you're a Christian. And what we desperately need in our day is to think more biblically about what it means to be a Christian. What it means to be a believer. And here, Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying, here's what characterizes you. Here's what defines you. Here's what makes you different. from all the world. You are not in darkness. You are children of light, children of the day. Let's pray.